Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM. If I sound a little strange, it's because I had oral surgery yesterday. So I'm just going to be operating the board today, and the interview is going to be done by my co-host,
Debbie Mayer
and Deborah Gilbert.
And we're with Nick Haddad, who has announced his candidacy for the Democratic nomination for mayor. So we will just take it from there. Welcome to At Issue.
Yes. Thanks for coming, Nick.
Yeah, welcome.
You're very welcome. Good morning. Thanks for inviting me in. April Fool's Day and all.
I know. Well, here we are.
Here we are.
Yeah. Okay. So, Nick Haddad.
Yes.
Why do you want to run for mayor of Hudson?
Not because I ran a couple of times ago.
No, I was going to get into that.
You were going to get into that, I'm sure. No, that has very little to do with it. It's just the fact that we've been, why do I want to run? Because I love
yes,
this
give
town.
Give us the short answer
the short
and
answer,
the long answer.
The really short answer is that this is a wonderful city, and I think we can do better than we're doing, and we're all working really, really hard right now. To manage this place, and I think we can manage it a whole heck of a lot better.
Okay.
And that's the short answer.
Okay. Do you have a long answer?
You want a long answer?
A short.
Maybe we can go back and forth with your Q&A.
Let's start with a little of your background, Nick. You grew up in this area. You lived in New York City for a little bit.
I did.
Started businesses.
Yeah. Well, I grew up, as you might know, in Red Hook, which is 22 miles south of where I went to high school there, you know, all of my primary schooling there. Went to college in New York at Columbia, graduate school there. Worked abroad for a number of years in the Middle East and came back. My father had started an electrical supply business, and back in the mid-80s, my wife Carrie and I and our children relocated back out of New York, upstate, and I went back to work with my dad.
Uh-huh.
And for the past, and we've been in business for 40 years, since 73, so it's a long time. And we managed a branch here in Hudson for 25 years.
Uh-huh.
We still have the main branch in Red Hook.
Yeah.
And aside from that, you know, it's bringing, you know, you were asking me what, you know, a little bit of the background there, so.
And you and your wife have both been on different occasions and in different situations, public servants.
Yes, my wife was an alderman in the first ward for at least 2 years. Before that, she served on a number of boards in the city. Mm-hmm. We didn't live in Hudson proper at the time. We lived in Claremont.
Mm-hmm. And was she on the school board at any point?
No.
No,
she was
okay,
not on
I'm
the
mistaken
school board.
About that. Yeah.
But, you know, the Arts Council, I mean,
yes.
She was one of the originators or one of the creators of the arts block.
Yeah, Carrie was one of the very first art
people.
Galleries.
Yeah.
Carrie
Perhaps
Haddad
the
Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps
yeah.
the first.
She was a pioneer in the art gallery department.
In the art gallery department, she worked very hard in saving the Opera House,
mm-hmm.
you know, between fundraisers and just the sweat, the real getting down on the...
And
working on it.
The two of you own quite a bit of real estate in Hudson as well.
We own some,
Mm-hmm.
All satisfactory rehabilitated, I might add. But
you provided some studios to artists
living in them.
With people living in them. With people living in them, not as many. I mean, there are not many residential buildings. They're mostly commercial, and a lot of them are, ground floor stores, and of course, artist studios in many cases upstairs.
Yeah. Okay, and also, we're talking to Nick Haddad today on At Issue. This is Debbie Mayer. Nick Haddad is currently one of the two aldermen for the first ward, and he has declared his intention to run for mayor of the city of Hudson. The mayor's term is 2 years, and I believe it was 4 years ago that you ran for mayor.
I did.
Yeah, and you lost by a very small margin.
A small margin of votes. Perhaps somewhere between 50 and 55. A lot of them were contested.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it had to do with the habit of carrying absentee ballots in or delivering ballots, one person being the as a proxy. And going to court, I think we spent a month back and forth with this. And we decided at the end, rather than fight it any further, that neither of us would have a mandate necessarily, either one of us, the current mayor or myself, that it was perhaps better that we collaborate and work together and hope that is a meaningful outcome of a very tight race.
Right. Yeah. Right. And 2 years ago, you declined to run for mayor.
I declined to run because I thought that a year and a half into a mayor's term is perhaps not long enough for him or her to get their legs, especially if they've had no managerial experience in the traditional sense of the word, because any small city or any city is like running a business.
Yes.
I mean, you recognize skill sets, you bring people in. You bring in volunteers, you hire appropriately, you try to make that business. And at the end of the day, it's all about its profitability, and a city to be profitable is a successful city. It's not a question of money necessarily. It's how that city thrives and how it best uses its resources. So I decided then not to do it, the hope that we would cross party lines and collaborate. A bit more.
Yes.
Has that happened?
It has happened in some areas. It would be unfair of me to say otherwise, but for the most part, I would suggest not. And a lot of it has to do, in my opinion, is there should be always a departure from previous administrations, meaning, one administration comes in, and there is a sense amongst at least Democrats of my stripe, and I proudly call myself one, that there's perhaps a bit too much influence in this administration by the previous
administration.
It doesn't seem to have its own sense of direction and or purpose. And when it's more reactive than intuitive it's not initiative based. And that is a problem. It's something that I sense.
So what initiatives would you base your service to Hudson as mayor?
Well, when you look at what we've tried to accomplish in the last 3 years, I mean, we
yeah, I was going to ask
okay.
you.
So we're going to look at this as an I think for a moment what we've decided to do as a council, and I'm speaking of this just as a council,
As the Common Council,
which administrates the city on the legislative side.
Correct.
And so we have to divorce it a bit from the executive branch. The executive should be more visionary than not, and attempt on the legislative side to encourage legislators to implement vision and so forth. I think it's almost been the reverse. It's definitely been the reverse. We have, as a council, we've become more proactive. So, for example, for the past 20-odd years, we've known that we desperately needed a new police station and a city court, that the current location for both is substandard, is putting it politely.
Yes.
And that if we didn't do it, the Office of Courts and Administration would do it for us. And if they did it for us, it would be on their say-so only. So how can you, for 20-odd years, just continue? It was part of what we consider to be the kick the can down the road sort of thing. And then we'll go on to other matters. So about a year and a half ago, or actually right into my first term as an alderman in the first, we thought, this is a critical component for us. And let's see what we can do. And truth be told, we had assistance from the executive branch here, which understood this. That is not to suggest that a previous administration didn't do everything it could to, or members of that, to stymie this. Don't get me wrong here.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Still going on. But the point of the matter is that we've done this in a collaborative fashion, meaning we reached out into the community. We engaged other people outside of just myself. The mayor has been exceedingly helpful here. Members of the Common Council were brought into this conversation early on. And like so much that happens in any city, it appears to be glacial. Yeah, it is.
Yes, it does.
It does, but that's the way it's got to go, because you've got to be able to, you've got to engage the public in a meaningful fashion. That means you've got to ask for their input. I mean, we looked at other spots in the city. This is perhaps not the most perfect, but it's the one that worked for us, and it worked within our budget. which is another important thing that
I'll just
is facing
say
us.
For those who might not know, so the Courts and Cops is going to move into what was the Finish Line
right,
building. It was
that,
things before
it
that.
It was a Napa.
But, yeah.
Auto parts
but
store.
Most recently it was Finish Line.
And it will serve our needs, hopefully, mm-hmm. for at least 2 decades. Mm-hmm. And perhaps we know it'll be a more attractive building than either the police station or the current, you know, city court. And definitely it'll be better looking than what the Finish Line looks like.
okay.
And it'll give us the opportunity to expand because it was perhaps the only 2-acre parcel in the city that could be worked with.
Exactly.
So using that, another thing that the council's been working on, I happen to be the chair of the Finance Committee, as you might know, and we're looking at our long-term finances here, and we all know as taxpayers in the city exactly what we have to shoulder here. We've got to find additional alternative sources of revenue. How do we do that? How do we do that without further burdening? I mean, our school tax and our city tax are not going to go away. Retirees are still going to get their pensions, which we know takes up perhaps as much as 50% of any budget. What do we do? So how do we plan for the future where we have known expenses coming down the line?
Right.
We need to create capital reserve funds. We need to be able to save for the future. We need to find revenue streams and be creative about doing that. And outside of the norm, perhaps something where, you know, the equivalent of a payment in lieu of in where pilot programs that actually where people volunteer money from not-for-profits or provide a service, or as has been done very ably by the legal committee, the what we're going to call our hotel tax, our room tax, where we can actually generate money based on the model where smaller and larger cities do of charging a tax for a room, either it be a bed and breakfast or a hotel, so forth and so on, which comes back into our coffers. We can't just live on parking tickets.
I was going to say parking tickets.
You know, and parking tickets provide us with
the Amtrak station.
And the Amtrak station. Yeah. And
parking meters.
And parking meters. Mm-hmm. We can't just live on that. So
no, you certainly can't. Nick, I just want to say we're on WGXC ACRA 90.7 on your radio dial. This is At Issue. Victor Mandolia is running the board, and Deborah Gilbert and I are talking to Nick Haddad, First Ward Alderman in Hudson, who has declared his intention to run for mayor of the city of Hudson. So, Nick,
again
back to you. The microphone goes back to you.
I have a question about the waterfront. That
please.
Seems
that.
To be
Let's,
one area where economic growth could take place. And
yes.
I wonder if you're satisfied with the rate at which that's being developed or if there's some way as mayor you could help.
Well, right now what we need to do, there's a critical component to this that where our waterfront is going to hinge on. And again, this goes back to quote-unquote crumbling infrastructure. If you notice, the mayor, with the assistance of the Common Council, at the behest of the council, closed the Ferry Street Bridge. That Ferry Street Bridge has been a problem now for, we've known it's deteriorating for the past 15 years. Nothing's been done. And quite frankly, at this point, we're not sure if we're, you know, part of why we want to be able to establish a capital reserve fund is that without that Ferry Street Bridge, we don't have a waterfront in the traditional sense of the word because we can't just rely at the Water Street at grade crossing because that in and of itself, while it's we all use it, can't be the only way in and out to our waterfront. Am I happy with, by the same token, the city's working right now? We met with Saratoga Associates, the president of the Common Council, and myself and John Friedman were the representatives on the council working with Sheena Salvino to utilize the Dunn building.
ID Sheena for us, please.
She's the head of Hudson Development Committee and operates her office down in the former Washington Hose. And she interviewed a number of engineering/development companies. Saratoga Associates has been decided to give us the vision plan on how the Dunn building can be mm-hmm. sort of a linchpin, mm-hmm. multi-use public space in the waterfront.
So the city is no longer trying to sell that building?
Well, no. I can't say categorically. I would hope that such a significant building and such a, in its role can be a revenue generator for us. We use as an example the Point in Catskill. Mm-hmm. It's not privately sure. owned. The city owns it. It did a brilliant job.
Yeah.
Granted, it's larger, mm-hmm. but it affords a it's a multi-purpose space. It could be for a convention. It could be for a wedding. It could be for anything. And I think the city gets revenue out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, when you have the opportunity, you can look and see what the winning engineering design firm Saratoga Associates has provided for what they think the waterfront could look like.
Okay.
It's really, it's extraordinary.
And is it that on the city's website?
Yeah, is it
on
It should be by now.
Mm-hmm.
If
oh,
not,
great.
You can get in touch with Sheena or Branda and be able to look at it, because there is an overlay of what they imagined, and that made a big difference to us mm-hmm. in the review process.
Mm.
So to answer the question whether or not, I mean, our waterfront, like anything else, is without a doubt one of our greatest assets, and we're very fortunate that it's so undeveloped, because uh-huh. it's that wonderful canvas, and we should go slowly and carefully, and
mm-hmm.
it
mm-hmm.
doesn't have to be an outlet mall, which was proposed. I mean, you know,
right.
I mean, the idea of that is runs against what
mm-hmm.
I think a sensible city would want. It's going to be a draw. We have what's going on, you know, marrying it to even some of the private properties down there, like the Basilica, which is also, mm-hmm. you know, brings people to our waterfront in some capacity.
And what about the boat club? Where does that come in? Are you a member
of
the boat club?
I am a member of the boat club.
I thought you were, yeah.
I am. And they own 1/4 acre.
Uh-huh.
And then they own the north end. Where that stands with
and
the city.
They own that ugly fence
oh,
that's
okay,
up
wait,
along
sorry,
the river.
I have to say which boat club. I've had a hint here. There's
sorry.
The sloop club.
The Hudson Power Boat Association.
Thank you.
Yes. And ugly fence.
Do you own that chain link fence that
on the
keeps
north
people
end?
From having an unobstructed view from the dock over there?
Yeah, you mean the chain link fence that prevents people from falling into the river, or the one that's on the bulkhead? The one that on the parking lot side, that's the state. Their chain link the chain link fence sort of wraps around the front of the boat club, and you would.
That's the state.
What?
There's a fence if you go to the parking lot
yeah.
where there's a way to put a boat in mm-hmm. the river. It's a ramp that goes
yeah.
down into the water.
Right.
There
That's
is a chain
state.
Link fence that runs along the edge of the parking
that
lot.
That belongs to that on the north side. That is the belongs to the boat club. That's the north dock,
mm-hmm.
the north point. Yes, that one there. Yes, yeah.
Okay.
What you're asking about?
No, I thought you might have been talking about the.
Guy Falkenheimer's.
Okay. That's Guy. I thought maybe if we're talking about that one.
Are you talking about the fence around
where
Guy
the Spirit of Hudson
yeah,
pulls
around
up?
The Spirit of Hudson?
No.
No.
I think you're talking
about
the north end.
The north
yeah.
one.
The north end at
yeah.
the very end
okay.
of the parking lot.
Yeah.
The one that runs perpendicular to the river.
And it's true, people can get an unobstructed view from the park now.
Yes.
Yes.
But
yeah.
For years, the only place to really approach the waterfront was that parking lot.
That is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, and I almost hate to ask this, but we have to. Where does Fergery fall in all
well,
of this?
Well, we've been trying very...
Fergery was a former, what would you call
fishing
it?
Fishing camp.
A fishing camp for decades.
A sort of unofficial hangout joint.
Yes.
Did
you ever have a place in Fergery?
About 20 years ago, yes, I bought a shack there,
uh-huh.
which subsequently my partner and I, we bought one from... the widow of the former owner, and then we decided we weren't going to be partners on the shack anymore,
mm-hmm.
Despite the fact that I bought a raft and all sorts of stuff so we could get to it,
uh-huh.
And he kept it, and it ended up falling in the river along with a bunch of, during one of the big storms, but That said, where does it stand as far as the city's concerned? The city's position is to take the buildings down.
Uh-huh.
We've tried, or I've tried. I've had, you know, work. I'm on a committee that's used to meet once a week regarding the disposition of the buildings. We've reached out in the hope that perhaps we could save one of them, but or two, and use them at, you know, where they would be indicative of what had been there before. It wasn't always a sort of place that invited people, but out of
right.
a consideration for perhaps a time gone by.
Mm-hmm.
A piece of history.
A little piece of Hudson's history, a little piece of Columbia County's history. I've been trying hard to engage some of the people that are still involved with it or have an interest to perhaps archive something out of there, either through photographs. We met with a representative from this New York State Historic Department mm-hmm. who came down and gave us an assessment that a lot of these buildings really weren't necessarily important enough to save.
Mm-hmm.
But out of consideration for the public and to know how emotional some people have been
about it.
Yeah,
there's a constituency for this place.
And it would be nice, perhaps, to keep one, but we need that to be decided by the actual heirs and heiresses of this. And
mm-hmm.
it's gone on for months now.
Sure has.
So we're not getting necessarily the feedback that we expected.
Uh-huh.
I am loath to just bulldoze them down overnight, don't get me wrong, without reaching out perhaps even more, and maybe this conversation I'm having over the radio right now will wake somebody up
mm-hmm.
to the fact that if you want to keep one or two of them, perhaps one is all we're going to keep right now.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the open house they mm-hmm. had right before it was fenced in
yep.
and people lost access mm-hmm. to the homes.
Yeah, that was almost 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And I found it very moving, and I discovered a wonderful sense of community with those people.
That is true.
As much as I am against people squatting on public land.
Right. I think that there is a lot of this could have been mitigated with perhaps a more a different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of blame to go around, if you want to call it that, or the reason we're at this situation. But truth be told, the city can't indemnify. I mean, it needs to indemnify itself. It needs to protect itself. And it had been decided that if you weren't, you just can't have people living essentially down there and not being able to insure them. And mm-hmm.
and I guess
so
there
forth.
Were problems with electricity and
right. There are a lot of issues. There are sewage
things,
issues. There are electricity issues.
Flooding.
There are safety issues. There mm-hmm. are a whole range of issues. And perhaps we could have solved them. But that time's long past now.
Mm-hmm.
But what we'd like to do is save something.
Mm-hmm.
But if we don't, it's not the city's job at this point. You know, I'm sort of the intermediary at this moment. I
mm-hmm.
take to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't happen, I think the city's done everything it can at this point. You know, and I'm giving all the credit, you know, this administration took it on itself to do it, as unpopular as it is.
Mm-hmm,
but the
mm-hmm.
city has
yeah,
really done
unpopular.
Everything it can right now
mm-hmm.
to try to make the best of what the Fergarians believe is a pretty bad situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask the Fergarians
to change the subject,
yes.
Do you think that the Common Council needs its own attorney?
Absolutely. I think
mm-hmm.
Tell us why. Well, for two reasons. Number
mm-hmm.
one, we're very fortunate, you know, to have an attorney on the Common Council,
mm-hmm.
meaning Mr. Friedman
right.
from the Third. And there's the natural inclination to use him as a lawyer, which is wonderful because he's able to provide that for us. But he has a job. You know, I mean, he is the chair of the legal committee. We asked because we were doing very well with Dan Tuzinski.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Tuzinski had understood municipal law, was extremely helpful, particularly for certain resolutions and laws that we want to enact here, and was able to work and collaborate with Mr. Friedman on this dramatically, and suddenly he was released. And mm-hmm. we had no reason why. I mean, there was never any rationale, but they exist, you know, Corporation Council and Assistant Corporation Council exist at the pleasure of the mayor. So
at the pleasure of the mayor. So if you were mayor.
That is correct.
Yeah, right now, as it stands, the Common Council must, if they need an attorney, they have to use the mayor's attorney.
Well, that's because the mayor has said that Andy Howard is his attorney now. That said, at Legal a week ago, he was invited to sit. And but there are certain, again...
Andy Howard was invited to sit.
Well, no,
at
he
Legal?
Does come. He,
yeah.
Well, he
no,
and,
I'm
yeah,
just
and he actually
the he
sat.
Was vague.
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. He yes, he was.
Yeah.
But the point is here is that before we made this sort of a critical decision, we asked for advice of Corporation Counsel, an opinion, and we received an opinion from our Corporation Counsel that, in fact, for the purposes of legislation, for the purposes of the work of the Common Counsel, mostly for the legal committee, perhaps to some degree on finance, that the our own lawyer is helpful, particularly one that understands mm-hmm. municipal law.
Mm-hmm.
And this was also discussed in executive session.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The
mm-hmm.
council decided
mm-hmm.
as an entity to do it.
Right, having been advised by Corporation Counsel.
Having been advised by Corporation Counsel, and this is what is so infuriating
mm-hmm.
to infuriating. How's the, I'll lower that down a little bit. That is so
maddening.
How is maddening and disappointing?
Frustrating.
That mm-hmm. you would come out of this meeting as a collective, as 10 people agreeing this, and then to go to a formal meeting and to see the pressure that's been applied by individuals who are currently not elected representatives or who don't sit on the council.
Right,
how's
don't
that?
Sit on the council.
They are elected.
Yeah, yeah.
To have pressured certain people on our Common Council to go against it.
Mm-hmm.
Why would someone be against you having your own attorney?
I think a lot of it has to do with how you're perceived. You're perceived as being, I don't even want to say it's more progressive. You're showing initiative.
I was going to say, you're seen as having a brain.
Well, I'd like, yes. You're seen as having a brain. You're seen as having
initiative.
And that's something that never stood in good stead in this with certain administrations prior to this. And I don't want to go back and...
As opposed to being a flock of sheep that the
well,
mayor
yeah.
leads?
Right. But the point is that this wasn't necessarily a vote of no confidence against the mayor.
Right.
The mayor agreed with it, for goodness sakes. But somehow or another, 2 weeks later, when we came to the vote, all had changed. And
along party lines?
Oh, no. Not at all along party lines. Mm-hmm. It was a bipartisan initiative. It was a bipartisan initiative by the sole Republican and the sole Republican on the...
there's only one Republican,
Republican
on the council, Deborah.
And quite frankly, he's not a Republican
okay.
any longer.
Okay.
He's declared NOP, but the point mm-hmm. is that this was a bipartisan initiative. Why it would be, how does one want to say, pushed against to no purpose.
Oh.
There was no purpose
okay.
in this. It was politics purely and simply.
Yeah. I've been asked to define NOP, which is no official party.
No official party.
And so I'm also going to ID us. It's time for this is WGXC ACRA 90.7 on your radio dial. This is Debbie Mayer.
And Deborah Gilbert.
And we have as our guest today Nick Haddad, who is a First Ward alderman in Hudson, who has declared his intention to run as a Democrat for mayor of the city of Hudson. So,
some people believe that the waterfront discourse might have been very different had the Common Council had their own attorney, and that the outcome might have been different, that the interpretation of the whole complex document.
You mean rolling the tape back when the LWRP was put together?
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps it could have, yes, because the attorney at the time was exclusively the mayor's attorney.
Mm, right, but that's yesterday, right?
That is yesterday.
It's
and
way
what we're
yesterday,
trying,
yeah.
What we're really trying to do here, I don't know if that's I wasn't as involved at the time
yeah.
with that document at all. Perhaps
you
at all.
You weren't an alderman then.
No, I was
mm-hmm.
not.
Yeah.
And that is perhaps an accurate assessment of the mm-hmm. past. right now, again,
well,
we
the
have
point would be it might prevent situations that were so exceedingly frustrating from happening again if the Common Council should get its lawyer.
Well, if we get a lawyer, at least we have someone we can ask a question to. And again, the idea of the council having its lawyer isn't for the council to be at cross purposes with the executive branch. It's to help us. Because, again, on many, as you know, and small, and like a small business, a small council, we have the lion's share of the work is sometimes shouldered by very few people. And you do need assistance. Years past, we had a councilman that was gone for 6 months out of the year, for God's sakes. I mean, for how many years was that? Hell of a nice guy, but, you know, gone for 6 months out of the year. How do you get any work
done?
Yeah,
and when you're not there.
And we all have committees to be on, and these committees are important. I mean, I'm on police, fire, economic development, and I'm the chair of the finance. You take this job on, it's not the pay, for goodness sakes. It's because you're the town you live in, you love, and you're passionate about, and you try to do the best you can, and you want from your colleagues to get the very best that they can give you.
One problem in Hudson from a business standpoint might be considered the fact that we have only one real main commercial street, Warren Street. And I wonder, maybe with the police station moving over to Union, maybe there's a chance to do some commercial development at the street level on some of the other streets in Hudson. What do you think about that?
Well,
possibility.
The possibility exists, but again, of course, you would have to get that through planning and zoning, because you can't on some traditionally residential streets.
Yeah, the street is residential.
So if the street is residential, I look at it this way: we look at the available property that we have within the city, and this is going to, you know, talking about business, you know, we have the highest rate of entrepreneurship of any city in the nation at this point, percentage-wise.
According to whom?
According to U.S. government statistics, we have it. We have a city. Well, indicative of that, you look at entrepreneurship. What entrepreneurship is a byproduct of volunteerism. It's a byproduct of being engaged. It's a byproduct of having a positive sense about your community. And I digress a little bit here. You look at the 90 people that read at the school every week in the reading program. We have one of the most successful reading programs in the state. Lisa Dolan has just done magnificently here. Yes. But when you think about it, 90 people from the city go weekly. My son, one of them, to read. It's kind of part and parcel of what makes us, I think, unique and extremely such a vibrant community. And this entrepreneurship, I mean, it's, you can be an entrepreneur and you're not just selling a hard good. You could be a writer, you could be an artist, you could do a lot of things. But getting back to what you're asking about improving the commercial district, we have, there's a lot of square footage that's currently or under, you look at the former, you know, the old CAS building that the city owns. We could be working within there, which is adjacent to the waterfront, the old L&B facility. So it doesn't necessarily have to be outside of our one commercial strip. I mean, we don't necessarily have to go into the residential streets. We used to have businesses over on State and Columbia more, I think, than Union and Partition. Although I just finished a building that was a sewing factory that was right in a residential district for years, you know, the old Schroeder Steel building,
right
on the corner of Partition and Allen. That, when you think about it, that goes back to probably the 30s when it was built, and it was a sewing factory. So
did you say you renovated it?
I renovated it couple of years ago, but I don't think necessarily that in I'm just using that as an example of a commercial property in a traditionally residential neighborhood. I don't think that stuff is happening as much as it used to, you know, outside of maybe an accountant or a lawyer being operating out of his or her home.
Well, I had wanted to ask you what the challenges have been, and I think that you've pretty well described them, you know, as alderman and working on the council, in addition to what you've managed to accomplish. I must say, I have a friend who's recent to Hudson.
Yes.
And she said to me, why do things happen so slowly in Hudson? And I said, I don't know. Ask the council.
At the council. Well, I think it's the natural byproduct of the legislative process. You can't. Things are introduced. They're introduced as resolutions. For resolutions to go forward, they have to be. They go into committee. They become discussed.
As you said, yeah. We've known for 20 years that the police building was inadequate.
Well, that's because that has more to do on the vision. Had somebody wanted to pick the ball up 10 years ago and mm-hmm. run with it, mm-hmm. they might have been able to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It takes a vision. You can't be hidebound. You can't be afraid of not. You can't be afraid of listening to a different opinion, for goodness sakes. Just mm-hmm. because it isn't your opinion, mm-hmm. just because it isn't your initiative, does not make it unworthy. And to be successful, I think you've got to sort of divorce personality from it. I don't want to sit and just bash the past. It's not really
right.
what it's all about.
I don't either.
And it's not completely fair, but
no.
I think there was a culture of pushback that created this. So when you ask why we didn't have a police in court or why
the waterfront is taking so long.
Well, the waterfront is, but we can't imagine it. There's nothing more important than our waterfront. I mean, on many levels, aside from our schools and stuff. But, mm-hmm. I mean, but so perhaps by going slowly and in a measured fashion, we've also encouraged more participation, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
And
I hope
that's
so.
Kind of part of the democratic, more than that is the fundamental part of the democratic process.
Mm-hmm. Now, the waterfront is the in the territory of the city, not the county. Is that right?
Right,
and
correct.
Why is that so?
That's a question I can't. I think because a municipality has its. I can't answer that. I can't answer that categorically. But it would be the natural inclination that. Your water, it belongs to the municipality that governs it, or it's within our, I don't want to say defined boundaries. I mean, I think New York mm-hmm. City controls its waterfront.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it falls within city boundaries, it's yours.
I was just thinking how we just accomplished a renovation of the courthouse, but that's a county project.
That's a county project,
and
yes.
And that took a while, too.
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to get back to the mayor's race for a bit.
Yeah.
I'd like to have you talk about why you think you'd be a good mayor for Hudson, and from that, what your vision is for Hudson.
Well, being a good mayor is being a good manager, mm-hmm. and being a good manager is recognizing, is seeing ability, and you've got to be bipartisan about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any good manager is the be-all and end-all of his or her business, industry, how you want to do it.
Because you've also got to have vision. You can't just
right. You have to have vision, and but your vision can't always be implemented. I mean, you may want to do something and not have the.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about skill sets. We, mm-hmm. I think, I've been in this community long enough to, and I think, as a person, I can engender or encourage more participation. I mean, we mm-hmm. have such a tremendous skill level in this city,
mm-hmm.
in every neighborhood. There are so many people who want to participate, and I think participating is a vital component in the management, or if you have an initiative going forward. I mean, i.e., for example, well, I don't know if perhaps the weighted vote issue is something that we should be discussing now. I don't know if it is, but to be able to we look within the community, we have people that have a deep understanding of the weight of weighted vote.
Uh-huh. Yes,
and they're
we
willing
do.
To offer that information.
Yes.
They're willing to be helpful. We have city planners that are retired here
mm-hmm.
that you could reach out and ask about, how do we make this park a little bit better? What do we do? What are the guidelines for doing this? And it doesn't necessarily cost the city any money.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it's like anything else here. They say the cardinal rule, you know, you're only as good as your worst employee.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have hundreds of potentially magnificent employees mm-hmm. here. There's no reason that we need to have, you know, that politics necessarily have to dictate how we bring people into the conversation. I think that that's what I think I'm a pretty damn good read of. And I think I can encourage people to participate in this process much more so than other folks. And I have a pretty good sense. I mean, you know, you're asking me these questions frankly. I have a pretty good sense of this city and understand the not just the mechanics. You know, I how an infrastructure is put together. I mean, under the ground, too. It's not just upstairs.
Oh, yeah.
So we have to face that, too. That's coming down the line for us. That's nothing we can keep. We can't keep kicking that down the curb.
No.
We kicked that can down the road a long time, and we need to figure out how we're going to save money for that. And I also, anyway, I also think that we need to be much more engaged. I know we don't have the... We need to be much more engaged with our school system. We need to be able to expect from them a larger percentage of graduates than we get right now for the money that we spend. It's all return on investment. I want, you know, these young people are our investment, and they're our future.
And with all those readers, I was thinking, it seems like that would be an investment into a higher graduation rate.
I would hope so, too. Yeah. But I think that we need to be more participatory. We need to be partners. And we need to... I know we can't demand it legally, but we can demand it morally and fundamentally as a community, that we expect more, and we're not going to stand for... And you're not... This is a disservice with a 55% graduation rate. Which is up 5 points over 2 years ago, which is laudable.
It's getting up,
But 55% is still a failing grade.
Yes.
And a lot of that has to do with the socioeconomic forces. I think we have to address those issues. We have to be, we need to encourage our business people and entrepreneurs to actually make a sacrifice for internship programs, which have traditionally been done here. I used to intern at least two or three young people a year, but you need to be willing to make the sacrifice as a business person to do it, because not all interns are going to come to you and make you money. You're going to be part of your job, but that's also goes to the heart of civics and what do we need to do in a community to make it better. What's our role in our community? What are our responsibilities? So.
Okay, one more ID, and then I want to ask you something else. So this is WGXC ACRA, 90.7 on your radio dial. This is Debbie Mayer.
This is Deborah Gilbert.
And we have as our guest here today Nick Haddad, the one of the two First Ward aldermen in the city of Hudson, who has declared his intention. I know we keep bumping into our mics. Who has declared his intention to run for mayor of Hudson. And so I'm wondering if you've thought about how you're going to try to win this time, you know, and who your constituency is. Where do you see the votes coming from?
Well, I'd like to see the votes coming from every community here. And what am I going to do this time? Well, I'll be a bit more open-eyed and less perhaps naive in the process. We're not going to let the messiness happened that happened before. That's number one. Number two, I think it's fundamental that we're going to, we have to, any administration has to be seen as representative of as broad a community as possible.
Definitely.
It can't be insulated. It can't just be the business people on Warren Street. It can't just be your ward. It has to be everybody. Those are hard. Those are hurdles one has to get over. How do you do it differently? You need to be able to reach out. People need to understand that, well, understand or recognize or perhaps come to the knowledge that you're open and engaged and you're as bipartisan as possible. I would like to be seen as that. And we also have to see... We can't just pay lip service. I mean, we have a there are certain recognizable, you know, issues here. We have we have a lot of people that are doing very, very well, and we have some folks that are not doing so well.
Right.
And we need to be able to recognize, how do we make those folks that aren't doing as well do better?
Mm-hmm.
How's just better? Let's just make it incremental. Let's. What can we offer? What can we as a city offer and as mm-hmm. a community offer?
Mm-hmm.
Without making promises that you can't keep. Mm-hmm. You look at the block grants that were historically handed out in this town for years.
Mm-hmm.
They were ideally, originally, earmarked to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't create any jobs here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the last block, one created a towing service. That didn't hire anybody locally. Another one went to underwrite a car dealership. And I think last I heard, he was holed up in Germany after having made off with our block grant money.
My goodness.
That's distressing.
Yes.
Yeah, so you think about that. Those block grants are given to cities that need money, not just for infrastructure, but need it to create jobs and to create programs and to foment viable employment, not to just disappear and to go nowhere, mm-hmm. which I can't say as far as the tone.
How does one create jobs?
Well, that's you need to encourage. First, you would like to encourage businesses to come here. I mean, you would like to be able to engage with. Here's an example. I mean, this perhaps is a tough thing to say, but maybe it needs to be said. When Etsy moved here, it promised 50 jobs. And, mm-hmm. and it provided 50 jobs.
Yeah.
A lot of us thought that it was going to provide 50 jobs for people locally that needed those jobs. It didn't always work that way. And that's because of, in my opinion, that those are the failings of our community, of our education, of even our community college not providing, maybe not the community college, maybe that's unfair, but we couldn't draw from the community what we wanted.
Really?
And that's the sense I'm getting.
Uh-huh.
That's the sense. And what do we do about that? How do we create jobs? Well, we need to provide training. We need to provide real education, and it needs to be a partnership. And it's not just a tech job, it's anything. But when we talk about internships, it could be somebody learning to repair shoes, for goodness sake. Something as simple as that, working in certain trades.
We don't have a shoe repair person in
Hudson. No, we don't. But using shoes is perhaps, not everybody wants his or her child to become a shoemaker. But using that as an example, there's no insult to working with your hands if you make a good living and you provide for your family. So there's no shame in it. There's no shame in any viable enterprise, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I would like to, by encouraging businesses to come here, because we are shovel-ready in some areas,
mm-hmm.
we're never going to see industry again. But what we will see are the kind of entrepreneurs that have been arriving here that perhaps can perhaps before they get here, we can get something in place where they want to come here knowing that there is an educated, keen workforce of people that want to step
mm-hmm.
in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then as far as reaching out, do you feel that you've been able to make allegiances, for example, with other aldermen? With the Promise Neighborhood people, there are all sorts of possibilities.
There are all sorts of possibilities, and you need to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think with my other aldermen, I think my relationship with them is collegial, cordial.
Mm-hmm.
I think ultimately they wouldn't be on the council if we all weren't sort of dialed the same way, that we
mm-hmm.
want to do right by our community as a collective.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not doing, we get a little money, sure, and we get some benefits, but mm-hmm. but we do this because we want to.
I have a question about the assessment. A couple of years ago,
yes.
private property
mm-hmm.
was reassessed,
mm-hmm.
and before that, there was a great feeling that things weren't being done in a just and honest
mm-hmm.
way.
That is true.
And as a resident of Hudson, do you feel that things are on a better footing now? Or do you feel that more work needs to be done in that area?
I think our current assessor is somebody that brought a skill set to the job. I think the previous two assessors, quite frankly, were substandard and were political appointees who I don't know whether or not was just malice or incompetence. I think it was a combination of both. But that said, our assessments right now are perhaps fairer than mm-hmm. they were. Mm-hmm. It's not as indiscriminate any longer as it was. But I also know, too, that unless we find more revenue, our mm-hmm. assessments are going to will go up. It's mm-hmm. unavoidable.
Sure.
And again, getting back to this is why we encourage people to spend money locally, because every dollar you spend, your tax dollars do come back to us. Mm-hmm. So again, it's to be bullish on your neighborhood and try not to buy out of county if you can. Little stuff like that, everything helps. Mm-hmm. We'd perhaps like a larger share of our sales tax burden. The biggest percentage goes to Kinderhook, if you can imagine.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. So, again, to go back to the assessment, yeah, fair-ish. It's fair. Nobody wants. I mean, they're crushing though. There's a small chunk of people.
Yes, a very small percentage pays 100%
but,
of the taxes.
But 39% of our property is off the tax rolls because we're the county seat.
Sure, mm-hmm. that's
and
it.
And that's not going to change. Mm-hmm. Our schools, our religious organizations, our county buildings, the city buildings, the hospital. I mean, it's tough. It's mm-hmm. tough, and we have to be creative. Otherwise, we're not going to be a success, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How are we doing?
Yeah, how are we doing here? What?
Okay. Five more minutes.
Five more minutes.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
When you look at, you know, again, it goes back to how do you? I'm sorry.
Okay. We have an anonymous caller with a fair question. It says, "Has he reached out to any other communities besides the First Ward about their concerns?"
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. On every level. I have a pretty good relationship with when we're talking about communities here, we're not defining them then by wards. I would think this caller's these are ethnic or racial. Are we talking about minority communities? I'd like that defined a little bit, but I'm going to assume that that's the question.
Yeah,
I think within we have a Latin community, we have an African American community, we have a Bangladeshi community mm-hmm. or East Asian community. Mm-hmm. I think I've reached out through their representatives and to members of those communities who I happen to know personally and are friends with. Mm-hmm. Of course. And if we look at the representation on the council, our council is perhaps more reflective of the city than not.
Yes,
and
it is now.
I think, and it has been for some, I mean, mm-hmm. I would hope that my colleagues on the council believe that there's, I don't think we should ever frame these arguments that a person is just from their ward, because that's, mm-hmm. How does one want to call it, destructive mm-hmm. and extremely prejudicial. But yes, in fact, absolutely, no question.
That's what I was trying to ask.
I'd love to know more.
Also.
I'd love to be able to be reached to more and to be able to reach out more, of course, too. Yeah.
Since, you know, the Promise Neighborhood people are working with a
Well, the Promise Neighborhood people are in my ward.
Population.
Their office is in our ward.
Uh-huh.
Right there on 2nd Street.
On 2nd Street?
You know.
Okay.
And Joan Hunt, I mean, we listened to a wonderful presentation of hers at mm-hmm. the informal meeting at Bliss Towers. And mm-hmm. also to answer this, if you remember back in September, I initiated mm-hmm. this, what we'd like to call our roving informal meetings. And mm-hmm. it was precisely to get into neighborhoods mm-hmm. that I believed then, and this mm-hmm. is well before I decided to do this again, mm-hmm. that I believed were underserved and underspoken to and underrepresented. And I look out at the same group of people at informal meetings of the council.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this goes to answer this question, too. Mm-hmm. By going into the second ward first and in Bliss Towers, mm-hmm. there was a demographic at our informal meeting that
is not usually
at City uh-huh. Hall.
Yeah.
I'm hoping when we go into when we go to Crosswinds at our next informal meeting mm-hmm. that there's a demographic of the city there. I would like that to be part of my answer, too. We didn't initiate this to be seen as... I initiated it back in September.
Right.
With the assistance and agreement of the council members, mm-hmm. precisely because of questions like this. Mm-hmm. And we're going to continue to do it. We're going to. It's not just a one-off where we'll be back at Bliss Towers in 5 months, mm-hmm. and we'll be back at perhaps a different place than mm-hmm. Bliss Towers, but mm-hmm. the common room there is large enough.
Right.
Do you think another way to involve constituents who have trouble getting to meetings mm-hmm. might be to have a Saturday meeting occasionally?
It might work that way. I hadn't thought about a Saturday meeting. I thought that by putting that informal meeting in a neighborhood, in mm-hmm. a place that accept, you know, where you can put a lot of people, would do that. I don't know whether or not Saturdays make, it might be, but again, we would, I don't know what the charter says, excuse me, mm-hmm. regarding
weekend meetings.
Right.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. part of the reason, and of course now we're going to the third ward. Well, mm-hmm. no, we're actually going to the fourth when we're in Crosswinds.
Crosswinds,
but we're not
is
really in
the fourth
anymore, is it?
I don't know. I'm mixed up.
No, they draw the line on the 4th. It's going to be in the 5th.
It's going to be in the 5th.
But right
okay.
now, traditionally, the residents of Crosswinds believe they're in the 4th.
Uh-huh.
So,
okay.
that said, mm-hmm. that's where our next meeting is going, informal. Mm-hmm. The one after that, it might be at the Legion or what is it, the VFW up on?
Yeah, on Union Street.
Up there. Uh-huh. Well, that's the VFW, the Legion.
Oh, the big one.
The big one
yeah,
up by
okay.
the hospital.
Yes.
And then we'll continue to try to be creative to get as yeah. many members of the city at our meeting so they can actually see what the heck we're doing mm-hmm. and get involved. Mm-hmm.
That seems admirable.
It does seem like a good idea. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was quite something, I'm going to tell you. I mean,
you got a good attendance at Bliss?
I would say we had almost 40 people there.
That's good.
And of that, 30 or so were not regulars.
Mm-hmm.
We had our regulars, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. So sure. they came too.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Did anyone thank you for doing this?
I'm not sure. No, necessarily. I think mm-hmm. No, not personally, no. I'm sure they were appreciative that you had an opportunity to talk or to ask questions or to mm-hmm. get an opinion across. Mm-hmm. But I think.
Okay.
We're done.
I think we're going to have to wind up there. Yeah, and it was winter, and they didn't have to go out.
Didn't have to go out.
Yeah. All right. Thank you,
You're
Nick
very
Haddad.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Debbie Mayer. Deborah Gilbert.
And this has been At Issue on WGXC. I wanted to let you know about the an upcoming show that we think is going to be really interesting. It's going to be about what white allies can do in the Black Lives Matter movement, and that's going to be toward the end of the month on the 29th. We'll be having Catherine Belke, the pastor from the First Presbyterian Church here in Hudson, along with Drew Payton, who is the pastor up in Spencertown, and along with Kaya Weidman, who is the director of Kite's Nest here in Hudson and does a lot of work on in this regard as well. So we'll be looking forward to bringing that to you. In the meantime, this has been At Issue on WGXE.